the number one key is to educate yourself because they're hoping that you don't know. Unfortunately, and that's the sad thing to say, and it's a sad thing to recognize that they don't want you to really know what it is that you are supposed to know, your rights as a parent, the accommodations, the modifications that your children deserve. Because one thing that I recognized, even when I knew it, I then had to hold them accountable to apply it. So we had everything in the IEP, but then your educators are not applying them in the classroom.
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerek Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and Brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from. I'm Winifred A. Winston.
And this is LaDerek Horn.
And we are super excited. We're bringing you another episode of the Badass Parent segment. And today we have Choice Simmons with us. She's an author, an advocate, a mom, and a business owner. Drum roll. Y'all
hey,
know
Joyce.
This is my favorite segment.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, Choice. I just want to get right in. Please tell the audience a little bit about yourself and share how you got started in this journey.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be amongst the both of you guys. Winifred, it's great to be here with you, to reconnect with you again. As you said, my name is Choice Simmons. I am a mother of a soon-to-be graduate of high school, graduating in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. I am an author, as you said, of 2 books. One book is When Queens Rise, and that book released December of last year. And I'm also the co-authors. I'm co-authors on 2 Amazon number one bestseller books, When Queens Rise and Women with Unshakable Faith. I am an advocate, as you said. I am an author. I am a businesswoman. I am the owner and founder of Beautiful Minds, LLC, where I provide educational therapy, advocacy, consulting, and grief support and coaching to families not only navigating special education, but those who are also navigating grief and loss. I began my journey when my son was in the second grade. So it's been a long journey, 10 years since he is a senior in high school. And I began it because I started noticing that there were some struggles with his reading. There were struggles with his spelling. There were struggles with his writing. And not only were there struggles, but these difficulties were hindering him from advancing in certain classes in school. Me knowing that I also struggled with dyslexia, I immediately went to the educators and informed them of what my thoughts were, using the term dyslexia very clearly because I knew the signs of dyslexia, me knowing that I had it myself. I asked them to assess him. And of course, when they kind of gave me a little bit of pushback in the beginning, I didn't understand why, but they gave me some pushback in the beginning. And I did eventually get the assessments that he needed. When we got the results back, their first instance was, oh, he doesn't have dyslexia. He doesn't have any type of learning difference. He has ADHD. And so that, of course, you know, it hit me the wrong way because as a Black parent, you know, you don't want to hear anything about your child having ADHD or, you know, any of those terms or labels that they tend to put on our children. And so that kind of pushed me into the direction of challenging them to help me to understand what it is that they seen based on their assessments versus what it was I was telling them that my child need. And that was just the beginning.
Now, Choice, let me ask you here. So you're dyslexic. When did you find out you were dyslexic?
I was wondering that too, because this is, I didn't know that this was part of the story. Like,
yeah.
What was your journey with dyslexia?
And so my journey, of course, was a little bit different because with my mom, I would say with African-American parents, they don't do labels. And so with my struggles, and I want to say mine also started around first or in second grade, I also had some issues with reading. My mom also, and it's interesting because I was just having this conversation with someone over the weekend and how it comes back tenfold. I remember my mom telling me that she also had conversations with the teachers and they wanted to actually keep me back in the second grade. And my mother was not having that. She said, you know, what is your reason? Why show me that she can't pass these tests? Show me that she can't read at reading level. Show me that this is the reason for you keeping her back. And if that's the case, then you can keep her back. But if that's not, you're not going to, you would not detain her. And so for me, I was diagnosed with dyslexia myself in the first or second grade, as I said, but I passed the test with flying colors. There was some weaknesses that I also had with reading, but there wasn't enough for them to keep me back. And that showed me the force of being able to advocate for your children. That showed me at a young age, just by seeing my mother and hearing my mother tell me the story as well of her advocating for me based on my learning differences.
You know what comes to mind? You were a girl and they diagnosed you with dyslexia, right? Which is a learning disability. And your son, boy, you saw the same signs in him that you knew that you struggled with, but a boy, a Black boy, they went to behavior. Mm-hmm. Right. And so ADHD true. Is mostly, we associate it with behavior, although mm-hmm. the inattentive and the hyperactivity and different things associated with ADHD often impact learning. However, for our little Black and brown children, it is associated with behavior. That's why he's not learning, because he's not doing something that he should be doing. Right.
Exactly.
And yeah, that was so interesting that I just thought of that when you said you got the identification, a girl. But he, a boy, they said ADHD first. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when you get that ADHD first, it's hard to go back and get the SLD.
Yeah. Okay. And it's interesting that you even said that, because I had to come to terms. Because initially when they said it was ADHD, I too had to ask the same questions. Well, show me that if he sits still in the classroom, that he's going to be able to read better. Show me that if he's not fidgety and moving all over the place, that then his handwriting is going to be better, or all of the signs that you have when having dyslexia. Show me that. You look at data, so show me the data. And if you can't prove it, then we need to go beyond what your assessments are doing. And they couldn't, I won't say that they couldn't, because I then still had to come to terms that maybe he does have ADHD.
Yeah. There's a high co-occurrence of ADHD exactly. and dyslexia. Yeah.
And that's what triggered me. So now I need to start doing my researches. If he has ADHD, how does ADHD affect his learning? It's not going to take away from the fact that I'm still telling you my son has dyslexia, but that also made me understand that I need to also look at other things as well. I can't turn a blind eye, but we're not going to just address what you're saying. We're also going to look at what it is that I'm saying. And when I had that aha moment, and when I realized that I couldn't be blind to what they were saying, then I was able to kind of navigate things a little bit differently. You know, you want to get what you say, I'm going to get what I say. So if I have to say yes to ADHD, you're going to say yes to dyslexia, because I know it's there. And that's what drove me. And that's what's been driving me every step of the way of his journey, which has become mine.
Did you get I'm sorry. Did you get?
I sure did.
What am I? Did you get SLD? That's what I was going to ask you. Did you get
sure
them
did.
To put? Okay. So I just want to be clear. So you did get them to get the primary diagnosis as SLD, which is specific learning disability, on the IEP.
Yes, okay. Correct. Second, with the secondary being other health impairment. Yes.
Yeah. OHI, other health impairment.
But the primary. And
just for the benefit of our audience, ADHD is one of the disability categories that sort of falls under the title of other health impairment. And I think out of all the other conditions that might be considered as other health impairment, ADHD, I believe, is the highest within that category. So that's what that is.
Okay. So how long before did you get that identification of SLD?
So we started in second grade. And then when did you get that SLD? And what did his interventions look like in school? Because that's important as well.
It was a long journey. I actually didn't get the official diagnosis until he was in sixth grade. And once he got into middle school and things didn't change, things actually got worse, of course, because the academics looked different. And not only that, it was, you know, multiple classes. Middle school is different from elementary school. So once we got into the sixth grade, his self-esteem was completely diminished. His confidence was gone. I had some run-ins with some teachers because he was awesome in math and science, but he struggled in reading. And there were some teachers that looked at his grades in math and science and would say, well, how did you get these grades in this subject? But you're failing in English, you're failing in reading. And so that also just shot his self-esteem, because you would never expect for things like that to come from educators, to come from the teachers, those who are teaching you. And once he got into the sixth grade and I realized that they weren't able to provide him with what they needed to provide him with, because they always come back to you with, we need to see the data. And so he tests differently than what he's actually performing in the classroom. And so to answer your questions, the accommodations, and you said the accommodations, and what else were you asking?
The interventions. Like, did he get Orton Gillingham? That's what I was getting to. Did he get interventions for the reading?
Yes. And so, yes, he received interventions for reading in elementary school, and they carried on with him in middle school as well. But nothing was working, because he was good in those interventions, but he still struggled with spelling. He still struggled in those other different areas. His processing speed was still very low. And it wasn't until the sixth grade that they called my son a puzzle, which is interesting, because when you look at autism, they use a puzzle as a metaphor, right? They recognized that the school wasn't doing what they were supposed to be doing, but they couldn't figure out how or why he was doing so well in certain areas, but how they was missing the fact that he was struggling in others. My son was a very quiet person. He still is to this day, but you have to understand that his confidence is gone. His self-esteem is low. So he blended in the back of the classroom. You don't pick on him. You don't call on him. You don't even know that he's there, but no one knew he was struggling. And that's what bothered me the most. When he got into the sixth grade. So I made them reassess him, reevaluate. Let's look at this data that you say that you need, and let's try to figure out why it is that he is still having these same struggles after having interventions and being in interventions from second grade to sixth grade.
Choice. But what did the IEP say? Like, did they have qualified instructors, or were they just pulling him out and doing small group reading? Like, both. Did they? Oh, they did. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to make sure, because I'm like, well, wait a minute. He was getting the interventions in elementary and it wasn't working. So what were they doing? Right. I'm doing air marks, you guys. You can't see me, but I'm like, I'm trying to decipher what interventions was the public school giving him that it wasn't working. So did we need to reevaluate the IEP? If they're doing two times a week, maybe we need four times a week. Maybe we need five times a week, right? How did he make it to sixth grade? But you just explained that he was quiet. He was compliant. He wasn't a behavior issue. And he sat in the back. Choice, can you tell me how tall was your son by this time?
Oh, Lord, I'm going to tell you, I don't know, because he's always been taller than me. I'm not sure how tall he was.
Because how tall is he now?
Oh, 6 foot.
Yeah, I remember he was like a teddy bear.
He's pretty tall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was like a teddy bear. I was like, oh my gosh, he's so, look, I remember looking up like, oh wow. And my daughter, you know, my daughter's tall. My daughter is what, like 5'10", and she's 13, you know, so.
He was a big boy then, you know, and you wouldn't understand how he just blended in, because he was a big teddy bear then, tall and, you know, kind of stood out, but being quiet and just, he found his way to blend in into the class.
So once you got them to reevaluate him in sixth grade, then things started moving along?
Yes, because at that point I wasn't taking their answers. I wasn't just conforming to what it was that they were saying. I needed data as well, but not only did I need data, I needed you to break it down and explain to me why it is that you continue to feel like it's okay that you will provide him with the resources or the accommodations that you're providing him with when we're not really seeing any growth, any movement in these areas of weakness. The more I questioned them, not only the more answers that I got, but the more services I got, because they couldn't give me answers. But when I stayed quiet, when I just went along with what they were saying, you know, they thought that everything was okay, but really, really it wasn't. I had to start educating myself. I had to be a voice, but I couldn't go in into the rooms being negative or pointing fingers or blaming. And I had someone to kind of backtrack. In elementary school, there was a lady who came into one of the PTA meetings. I was on a PTA board, and we had her come in and speak to the parents. But she provided tutoring for students that had learning differences. And I signed Rashad up for her tutoring services. And it was actually her who started helping me to better understand, because she was not only a tutor, she was an educator. And she specialized in special education. And so as she was tutoring my son, I would ask her a bunch of questions on what it was that she was doing, on the type of learning techniques that she was providing to him, because he started to get it then. He wasn't getting it in the classrooms because they weren't teaching him the way he needed to learn. They were teaching him based on their cookie cutter, the way they feel like every student needs to learn in the classrooms. And she wasn't doing that. So things start looking different for him when he started receiving tutoring services from her. But then she was also educating me as the parent of, these are the questions that you should ask. This is what they're going to tell you. So that kind of helped me and helped me to navigate the direction I needed to go in as a parent. And it kind of took off from there.
Do you remember maybe one or two of those key questions that you needed to ask and maybe other parents need to make sure they ask?
I'm going to be honest. It's been so long, you guys.
No, I understand.
No, but the key
is ask questions.
And you said you educated yourself. So
yeah,
we know
now.
Yeah,
the key is to ask questions and to educate yourself. The more knowledge you have about the thing, whether it's dyslexia, dysgraphia, whatever, a learning disability, whether it's an audio processing disorder, whatever it is, the more you educate yourself on it, the better equipped you are when you go into the rooms or when you're talking to the teachers or when you're talking to the special educators to be able to understand yourself, but to find what's going to be best for your children.
Yes, yes. And as special education law as well, we've talked about this before, rights law, that mm-hmm. website it's overwhelming. I always tell parents, sign up for the newsletter, but to really understand special education law, because that IEP is a legally binding document. Mm-hmm. And there are certain timelines and deliverables and things that the school need to be held accountable for. But as parents, if we don't know that, then we can't come to the table
hold
with that.
Them accountable. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So learning about the learning difference, educating yourself on the learning difference, but then also special education law. And mm-hmm. it's not always easy. Whew.
No, it's definitely not. It takes patience and consistency. It's a lot, you know, it's overwhelming, but it's worth it. Once you start seeing that you're getting the things that your children need, once they start seeing that they can't pull the wool over your eyes, that they even respond and act differently. It is a lot, but it definitely is worth it. I tell the families that I work with as well, that the number one key is to educate yourself, because they're hoping that you don't know. They honestly, unfortunately, and that's the sad thing to say, and it's a sad thing to recognize, that they don't want you to really know what it is that you are supposed to know, your rights as a parent, the accommodations, the modifications that your children deserve. Because one thing that I recognized, even when I knew it, then I then had to hold them accountable to apply it. So we had everything in the IEP, but then your educators are not applying them in the classroom. And it wasn't until my son kind of got older that I had to begin teaching him to advocate for himself and help him to understand just what you said, Winifred, that IEP is a legally binding document. I don't care what they say. They don't have enough teachers, hire more. If he needs a one-on-one, then you need to provide him with one-on-one. If he needs whatever that IEP say that he needs, then you need to go out and find a way to make sure that he's receiving it, because it is a legally binding document. And a lot of parents feel like they have to stay quiet. They shouldn't say anything, because we are hoping that those educators who our children are with for majority of their day, 7 to 8 hours a day, are doing right by our children. But I had to also realize they're overwhelmed, which is why I had to take a different approach. I didn't want to point fingers. I didn't want to point the blame. I didn't want to put it all on them. I realized I had to start not just from the educators, but the whole school. How are your teachers receiving what they need to make sure that they are able to provide not just my child, but all of the children in their classroom with what it is that they need? And a lot of the times they don't have it. And because they don't have it, somewhere it falls short. Somewhere it falls through the cracks. And I had to give them grace and mercy. But at the same time, I knew what my child was going to get. It's but so much I'm going to do, and what I'm going to give you if you're not doing what you're supposed to do.
So once middle school, you got the identification and you got the reevaluation, what did it look like for the rest of middle school and then starting high school?
So sixth grade was rough for him. He got the diagnosis in sixth grade. The official diagnosis was placed on his IEP at the end of sixth grade. I kind of went at things a little bit differently, which is how I got him into the non-public school that I got him into with the Summit School, because the county didn't necessarily want him to go to that school, but I put him there anyway. I put him there before I asked him. Let me say that. Let me be honest. I put him where I knew he needed to go before I asked them where they thought he needed to go. And then after I put him there, I gathered up all my data and all my reasons and made sure I had all my ducks in a row as to why I put him there and why he was going to stay there and why they needed to make sure that they provided the free education that my child is supposed to receive based on the law.
Wait a minute. I see your face like, yeah, wait a minute. So you, wait a minute. wait a minute.
I got questions too. Go ahead.
So he had an IEP and you toured Summit, because let's tell you how it goes at these private schools. You got to apply. You tour. Your child has to, when your child is touring, they're basically interviewing for a slot at this school. Mm-hmm. Right. So you went through that whole process. I'm going to call you like a private pay parent. Mm-hmm. Right. And yes. Once he was accepted and he was placed there, now for this first year.
Oh, it wasn't even the first year. I did. I applied. I applied for the school. I applied for a scholarship, got partial scholarship for him to go to the school. But I explained to the school that I was going through the process of non-public. I was doing everything all at the same time. So although I applied and I went ahead and put him there, he got accepted. I went ahead and put him there. I paid for what I needed to pay in order for him to get in there. As I was doing that, I was also navigating non-public. I was also having IEP meetings. I was also going to mediation. I was gathering my resources, gathering my data, gathering everything that I needed for them to understand why he needed to go to that school.
Choice. You didn't have an advocate. You didn't have someone helping you. You no. Just did all of this.
I just did it. Yes, correct. I didn't even realize I needed an advocate. And it really wasn't until my son got until maybe the seventh grade, about to go into the eighth grade, that people start saying, like, how did you do it? You didn't have an attorney? You didn't have anybody going? And I'm like, no. Like, was I supposed to? Like, should I have? And they like, how did you, like, they could not understand how I got to where I got to. Number one, I'm going to say I'm a woman of faith. And so throughout my whole process, I stayed faithful to the process that I was going through the whole time. I prayed and I stayed faithful. I didn't know how it was going to be. I had a lot of no's, a lot. And every time they said no, I went and did more research as to why they was going to turn that no into a yes. And they couldn't deny what I brought to the table, which is why I feel like they've given me everything that I needed for my son and more, because I didn't go in there, again, pointing fingers, blaming them. I didn't go in there, rah, rah, you know, making a fool of myself. I went in there educated and with the data, just like they came to me with the data.
And Choice, can you give us a sense of what some of that early data was that you were collecting that helped you to get this placement? And I just want to say this, that for me, going through season one of our podcast, and just in case there's anyone listening who has not listened to season one, go back and listen to season one. But we kept hearing, you know, about families and who were getting these out of district placements. And I know it was one of the things that I said to Winifred going into season two, is like, we really need to shine a lens onto this process, because it always seemed like just a very elite sort of thing to almost like win, right? Like you're saying, an advocate, attorneys, you know, it seems like so many of the families that I've interacted with who are able to get these placements tend to be very well resourced, white families, you know, sometimes Asian families, but it's rare that we see that in the Black community. And so, yeah, I think it's like, wow, you did this, you know, without having that personnel behind you to help push this forward. And so you're saying the data, what was some of that data that you were collecting about your son and his experience that you think was pretty critical in being able to get this placement?
Same data that they was collecting to tell me he couldn't receive the resources that he deserved. I would look at his testing. I would look at his homework. I would look at everything that he was doing in class, and I would ask them why. They would look at the assessments. They would look at, you know, the results of these different assessments, whether it was an academic assessment, or was a psychological, or whatever those assessments that they were completing. They would look at those numbers and tell me why they felt like he was doing better than what he was doing. Then I would counter it with the work that he was producing. It didn't match. It didn't look the same. So now I need to understand better as to why he's still producing the same type of work, but he's able to pass these tests and he's able to get high marks in certain areas on these tests. What is it about the way that he's doing things? And so I will counter what they were providing me with the data, with the work that he was actually producing. I will also counter it with, they say things like, when you're going into the IEP, one of the things that they want to determine is whether or not they should be in a least restrictive environment,
right,
versus the general population.
Education.
But, you know, education, there you go. Right. General education versus being in a least restrictive environment.
Right.
And I can tell, me knowing my son, that's number one. You got to know your children. I can tell the difference between the way he learned in a classroom with 23 students versus the way he learned in a classroom with 10 to 15 students. He felt more confident in a smaller classroom. Even when they would pull him for small groups, he did better working one-on-one with a special educator than he did being in the classroom and having to navigate and trying to figure things out for himself. And so with me knowing that, those were also some things that I provided that I took to the table and made sure that they seen for themselves. How was he operating in this huge, large classroom versus how was he operating in smaller settings?
And in the private school, it was smaller.
Smaller classrooms. Yes, it was anywhere from 7 to 10 students in a classroom versus 23. And he was getting the one-on-one support that he needed in the classroom. And they were teaching him in a way that he needed to learn. You know, very early on, once he started at the school that he went to, they helped him to be able to understand his learning profile. I thought that was just like magnificent.
Absolutely.
Like you're not just telling him the, you know, they use the terms Common Core, or, you know, you have these IB schools where they have these common, I don't even know the term to use right now, I'm drawing a blank, but you say you're teaching them these teaching them a certain type of way, but you're not teaching them the way that they need to learn. Once he was able to be taught and to learn the way he needed to, whether he was more audio than he would, or he's, my son is a visual learner. His learning preference. Not only does he learn better visually, he's more hands-on. So they allowed him to combine those. They allowed him to be able to use those learning tools and those preferences to build his learning profile. And they couldn't deny that he wasn't doing better by being able to do that, which is why they couldn't tell me no.
And what you're really doing there is you're saying to the school, this is something that this private school can provide.
Yes.
Right. And you're not able to provide this in district. Is that that's essentially the argument that's being made?
What the argument is. Yes, that's exactly right. What the argument was.
A free and appropriate public education.
Education, exactly. If you're not able to provide him with the free, appropriate
public education. Yeah.
I was about to say what Winifred just said. I say the FERPA. If you're not able to provide that, then he has to go somewhere where he can, because where he was sucking the life out of him. You know, and so now it is becoming a behavior issue because right. He no longer wants to go to school. He no longer wants to be amongst those people that he's amongst because he learns differently. He's no longer able to focus or concentrate in the classroom because the teacher is not teaching him the way that he needs to learn. And this is turning him into a person that he was not. And I could not have that. And I had that conversation with admins and teachers. And this is what I'm not going to allow happen in a pleasant way.
Right.
And this is what we need to work towards having done. And if you can't do it, then I will find somewhere who can, somewhere that would.
And so we want to be clear, when you did this and you prove that he's thriving here, the output is matching the assessments now. Right. Mm-hmm. So the public school district was responsible for covering the tuition at that private school. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Right. So she won a non-public placement on her own. Okay. No attorney, no special education advocate, and got the school district. And when you said you placed him first, now, you know, with my background, I know what you did. There was no guarantee you were going to get that non-public placement. And I know what county you lived in too. And a lot of parents spent a lot of money fighting that county. Okay.
Oh yes, most definitely.
Yes. Yes. So when you said that, I said, well, wait a minute. Cause there's no guarantee. Like you go there and you place him and you tell them, oh yeah, we're in the non-public placement process.
They don't. Exactly. I went to mediation actually. When I went to mediation and I sat down at the table, and I explained to them, like, enough is enough. Like, I've given you chance after chance after chance after chance. You say, let's look at the data. We've looked at it. We've looked at it for years. It still looks the same. Right. And he's still struggling. Something has got to change. And when they said, okay, well, we need to start talking about schooling. Oh, I already have in place. This is where I want him to go. This is the reason why I want him to go here. And they told me no. I said, okay. I filed another mediation. This is why I want him to go here. This is what they're able to provide. They give smaller classroom sizes. They specialize in educating students with learning disabilities. They specialize in that. So why would we not put him where they specialize and they're able to provide him with the education that he deserves?
So you use the word there, mediation. You filed another mediation. For the folks who don't know, what is that?
Mediation is, it's kind of like going before an attorney, an educational, someone within the school system that helps mediate between the parents and the school system. And they're actually, I believe, their actual lawyer, or they specialize in the law of education, and they come in and they mediate between why the school is saying whatever it is that they're saying and why the parent is requesting what it is that they're requesting. And so when you file for mediation, you have to fill out a form, and in that form, you're telling them what it is that you want, why it is that you want it, and what the outcome is going to be if they provide it.
You're filing that with the IEP team?
You're filing it with the county that you live in. Yes, you're going to file that with the county that you live in. And then they bring you all to the table and they discuss what it is that the school is saying that they're able to do and what it is that you're asking for. And then you pretty much got to prove your case. It's like going before a judge. And then they come down to the end and they tell you whether or not you're going to get what you're asking for.
Wow. Like, I'm speechless. I'm never speechless. I'm like, just wow, because that is huge. That's just huge. And now your son is in a specialized school for the remainder of middle school. Mm-hmm. And did you have to start that process again for high school?
I did. And so one thing that I always feared with going through the process, I used to fear annual evaluations because I always thought, and this is, it's sad to say, but it's my truth. I always thought if my son start doing better educationally, that they would want to put him back in general education.
That they would take him
back in district, that they would take him from where he was and put him back in the public school where he came from. I used to fear it. Every time we went to a meeting, I'm like, oh Lord, they're going to say the data look different. He's learning, he's doing better. And they're going to pull him and they're going to put him back into the public school setting. But what I had to realize was the reason that he was doing better is because of where he was. And so every time I went into a meeting, I made sure I led with that. The reason he's doing better, the reason that his academics look different, the reason that his grades look different, the testing, the data, the reason everything looks different is because where he is. And so when he got to the eighth grade, because the middle school that he was in only went up to the eighth grade, we had to start the process all over again. We had to start searching for the best high school that he needed to go to that was going to teach him. And we looked at all schools. We looked at the home school. We looked at schools that provided, they had Kennedy Krieger services where they worked in smaller groups with inside of a public school setting. We looked at private schools. We looked at non-public schools. We looked at all of these different schools. And one good thing about the school that he was in is they provided us with recommendations based on his learning, based on where he was at that time in the eighth grade.
They were used to supporting students making that transition from middle school into high school. So they already had kind of like feeder schools students could go to.
Exactly. Yeah. Schools within your county, schools that were all over, which is how we got sent to Lab School of Baltimore. We got sent to Lab School of Baltimore because my county was willing to pay for him to go to Lab School of Baltimore. But ultimately, when I had the meeting with the dean of the middle school that he was in, she felt like he would do better at the Lab School of Washington. But what she led with was, your county is not going to pay for it. So we went on a journey. We looked at all the different schools that they thought he would do good at. We interviewed them. We had him shadow them. We did all of that. And we even went to the Lab School of Baltimore. You know, we got the feel of that school. And then we visited the Lab School of Washington, the school that they said my county wouldn't pay for. And he fell in love with the school. And I said, well, I don't know how we're going
to. It's hard not to fall in love with Lab. Yeah.
I don't know how we're going to do this.
Yeah. We were talking before we started recording, and I was honored by the Lab School of Washington with an award. I want to say that was 2020. They have they recognize sort of like, I distinguish people with learning differences and
every year.
Yeah. And so I during the pandemic, I was given the award. And then I want to say a year or two afterwards, they had an actual ceremony at the school. And so I got to take a tour and I fell in love, you know, like that is an amazing campus. Yeah. So, okay. So did you end up at Lab School of Washington? Is that where y'all ended up?
We did. But the county told me no three times. Mm. They told me no three times. They said they gave me every reason in the book for why he couldn't go to the school. And then the last reason that they gave me was because of distance. And so what I did was I went and did my research and I looked up where there were different cases where families wanted to send their children to schools that were out of their district, even out of their state, and how, you know, different ways to kind of navigate and to get around that reason. And then what I did was I went to mediation. Okay. Every time they told me no,
another mediation. Right.
The school told me no, but we're going before the county. They need to explain to me why. So we went back to mediation, and we went to mediation 3 times. They, for every reason that they said no, we went to mediation. And then when they told me that it was the distance, you know, I provided them with data. I calculated the distance from my house to Lab School of Baltimore, which is where they were willing to pay. And I calculated the distance from my house to Lab School of Washington. It's the same distance.
I was going to say that.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
So why are you saying no to this one, but you're saying yes to that one?
Yeah.
There's no reason. And because there's no reason, this is where I want him to go. I don't want him to go to that school. Nothing was wrong with it, Winifred, but he chose the Lab School of Washington. He's had so many no's. He's gone through so much. I'm going to provide him with what it is that he needs, and you're going to help me to provide that for him. And if distance is the reason why,
it's the same distance.
I'll take him. But no, right. If you don't want to transport him, they explain why, you know. And I'm going to toot my own horn because my son is the first student in 15 years that got funded for the Lab School of Washington. They stopped. Anne Arundel County stopped funding the Lab School of Washington for whatever their reasons were. But he was that first yes. And I believe at that time they said 15 years that they actually approved Anne Arundel County to go to that school. Because I took everything off the table. Whatever your excuse is, I took it off the table. If it's distance, it's the same distance. If you don't want to transport him, I'll transport him. Now, what is your excuse? They didn't have any, so they had no choice but to say yes.
I do want to just underscore, like, because I have friends and have been in contact with folks at the Lab School of Baltimore. So also an amazing school.
Yes, definitely.
Like, Lab is like just that entire model of support for students with different challenges.
I was going to chime in.
Okay.
Because the Lab School of Washington is the founding school. The late, great Sally L. Smith founded the Lab School of Washington. And she also had an adult literacy program back there, which I always often talk about because she helped adult learners as well. And so then from the Lab School of Washington, she then founded the Lab School of Baltimore. And she did some training, and there's some other schools in Philly and also Delaware that she trained with her model, academic club model, which I love. But in saying that, the Lab School of Baltimore and the Lab School of Washington, they are different and they have different profiles. And they used to be under one umbrella, but they are no longer. So the Lab School of Washington and the Lab School of Baltimore, there's two separate entities now, whereas in the past they were not, because the schools were founded by the late, great Sally L. Smith. And I'm saying all of this because I worked at the Lab School of Baltimore as director of admissions. And so everybody, you know that. So we've been putting out there for you guys to understand that as well. So I know, and I was nodding my head and shaking my head because I knew immediately we had kids from PG County that were going to a school, Baltimore Lab School. And that's one thing that we have to take into consideration is the distance and how long the child will be on the bus. Right.
How long? Exactly.
In the morning, that can easily be an hour and a half. No, 2 hour commute. Right. When I worked out in PG County myself, me driving, not stopping to pick up anybody else, was an hour and a half. Let it rain. That's easily 2 hours. So they do look at that when you have a child traveling that far. And this is one thing they also look at when we have inclement weather. Right. Yeah. And so you're taking in kids from all different counties, and different counties have different rules around the weather. It may be one way in Baltimore, but it may be another out in PG County. Right. And so sometimes we would have times where kids wouldn't be at school because transportation, just because of the inclement weather. So there are things that they look at. But when you said you did the distance and they were equal, because you live in a great spot, right? Like you lucked up being
that's equal.
Yeah, like Baltimore versus DC and having that same distance wherever you live because of your location. But that is awesome. 15 years. Look at this. This is a badass parent right here, y'all. Okay. this is the badass parent right here. She just did. And like you said, you kept getting a no. And you was like, no, okay, I got your no. And then you came back. You didn't let that stop you. And I always tell parents that, you know, keep going until you can't go anymore. Like, mm-hmm. keep going until you can't go anymore. And the first thing is the cost. When they see the cost, I can't do it. There's no way. Keep going. First, they got to get accepted, right? Mm-hmm. Keep going. Then you have to apply for the scholarship or sponsorship or financial aid, right? You got to get that. There's no guarantee. Keep going, right? And then when you get that balance, okay, well, how are you going to pay the rest of that? But you know what I'm saying? Like, you cannot stop. But too often in this process, I think parents stop right where you said that you hope that the school system does what they said that they're going to do, right? Yeah. You get the IEP and you hope that they're doing what they say that they're going to do.
Yeah. And it's tiring. Like, it's understandable that you will want to stop, that, you know, it's understandable, because there were plenty of times where I was just like, okay, you know, you're going to keep telling me, no, I'm not going to win. I'm not going to win. Why keep fighting? I had to start asking my question, what was the fight for? And when they kept on coming back that it was going to benefit my son, it was what was best for my son, then my fight and my drive was amplified. Like, I couldn't stop. I couldn't. And I had come so far that I realized that the more I was educating myself, that it wasn't just for me. It wasn't just for my son, because then I start helping other families to understand. Number one, it starts with you understanding your rights. You mentioned that, and you mentioned rights law. Understanding what your rights are. They can't deny that. And when I realized that they were denying me because they were hoping that I would just take their answer for face value and I wouldn't challenge what they were saying, once they realized I wasn't going to stop, at that point, they was just like, you know, I might as well just, you know, go ahead and give her what she's asking for. If not, we were going to mediation. Mediation was my best friend.
Mm. Trace, can I ask, and we're kind of speaking to it, but I can imagine, so I'm dyslexic. I have executive functioning issues dealing with what I'm hearing you talk about, paperwork and procedures and all of that. And I can understand the drive in wanting to help your son, and particularly once you start seeing some of the return. But just personally on you, right? Like, what was the cost, right? Like, not financial, but like, I'm hearing what feels like a lot of sleepless nights and that sort of thing, right? But like, because I don't want people to just think like, this is some Hollywood movie, or, you know, like you, like some super Black woman that could just go through this and just keep on going. Like, what was some of the cost here? Because you were doing this on your own, you know?
Yeah, a lot of sleepless nights. A lot of tears, a bunch of stress,
yeah,
a bunch of worrying, a lot of fears. It was a lot of it. And I carried it by myself. Mm-hmm. And so, as I say, it was driving me. It was actually like I couldn't stop. I was afraid to stop because I felt like if I stopped, then my son wouldn't get what it was that he needed. And so I just had to keep moving. But it was a lot of pressure. It wasn't easy at all. And as I mentioned before, every year I was afraid of going back to that table to have to prove to them even more why he needed to be where he was, or why he deserved to continue to receive the education that he was receiving. But I couldn't stop. If I stopped researching, I prayed more, because I knew the answers had to come. Like, it was a balance between it both, but it was a lot of sleepless nights.
Yeah.
A lot.
How were you treated throughout this process? How were you treated once they said no and you came back? Then they said no again and you came back, right? Because you said you were on the PTA because you're a member of the school community, but mm-hmm. at the same time, now you're fighting the school. Mm-hmm. So a lot of parents struggle with that, feeling obligated to the school community. Right? Feeling like, oh, well, I don't want to keep going against them. You know, I love the school. I love the school community. But at the same time, the child is struggling. So how did you balance that?
I still respected them. As I said in the beginning, I didn't go in pointing fingers.
Wow.
I went in with the thought and the idea as to how can we work together to make this right? Because I realized when I initially went in with, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, they became defensive and guarded. They pushed back a little bit more. But when I came in the room respectful and educated, they couldn't deny what it was that I was talking about because I was providing them with the same level of respect, the same, the data, the whatever it was that they needed. I was doing the same thing that they were doing. And my goal has always been from the beginning is how can we work together as a team? My son is with you guys majority of the day, but at home, this is what I see. At home, this is what I'm dealing with. So how can we work together to make sure that he's going to be a well-rounded individual academically, emotionally, socially, because he's not just getting that from home and in his community, he's getting that from his school as well. And when they were able to see, okay, she's just a parent that's advocating for her child and wants the best for her child, they had a different approach with me. And it was hard, but they couldn't deny the facts, just like I couldn't deny the data. Once everything was undeniable, then there was really no choice but for us to find a middle ground and an understanding of how we can do right by that young man.
And Choice, how did you find out about the Summit School, right? Because I know I didn't even know there were private special education schools, and I literally drove by one, Baltimore Lab, at a previous job. Like, I drove by it every day, but never knew that that was a special education school.
I Googled it. I looked up schools for students with dyslexia in my area, and it was one of the schools that came up.
Yo, thank you for saying that too, because sometimes when we say like, I had the data and I did the research, everybody's like, oh, it was deep. You know, like it was straight up just on Google, right?
I Googled it. Yeah.
And sometimes we don't get because we're not looking. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I just kept looking. I Googled it. And then I start asking the schools. And then I start asking different educators, because now at this time I'm invested and I'm connected. I heard about this, like, Decoding Dyslexia. I learned about a lot of these different organizations, and I placed myself in the room as uncomfortable as it felt. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know the questions to ask. I didn't know who I was going to connect with, but I knew I had to be in the rooms and be surrounded by the different people who knew more than me so that I can educate myself more so that I can be able to provide my son with what it is that he needs.
See, when I met you and I told you that, you already knew that. I said that. I said mm-hmm. exactly that. I said, I told you, I didn't know what questions to ask. I mm-hmm. just showed up. I knew I needed to be there. And I showed up. And yeah. then I would take notes. And then if I found someone I felt comfortable with in the very mm-hmm. beginning, I would ask that person, could you explain exactly. that to me? And what does that mean? And so, you know, when I say that, parents just give me this look, you know, or when I'm talking to them over the phone, like, and I'm like, no, you can do it. Show up.
As uncomfortable as it feels, show up. Pretty yes. much, because I can tell you, I was uncomfortable. Like, I would go to the different events. I would go to, like, I would show up, and I'm looking around like, I have no clue why I'm here. Like, I know why I'm here, but do they know that I have no clue why I'm here? Like, are they looking at me like, who is she and why? You know, in those different feelings. And that just brought doubt, more doubt and anxiety. And it kind of brought me down. And I just had to remember what my end goal was. And at that point, when I started showing up in the rooms, it wasn't just for my son. It was like, how can I help others? Because I'm not the only parent that's going through this. I'm not the only parent who do not know.
But Choice,
a lot of these different things. Yes.
What did those people look like in the room?
Not like us. What you mean?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was
like, that's why I was uncomfortable.
Yeah, you know, we showing up and you're the only Black parent mm-hmm. and you have dreads.
Yeah.
Right. And you're showing up and you're the only Black parent and they're talking like they all know what's going on. They're all connected. They live by each other. They work by each other. They know each other. They mm-hmm. just like, oh, wow, I don't have.
It's as much advocacy work and as it is also socializing, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of these folks know each other. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, in my experience in advocacy, I think it's actually one of the biggest barriers. And I'm not sure if these white run organizations are aware of it, is that so much of this is driven from social contacts. And so often, because of the history of segregation in our country, we're not connecting socially. You know what yeah. I mean? We rarely have access to these predominantly white and let's also be real, oftentimes predominantly wealthy social circles. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. to walk into those rooms can be very stressful, you know, because historically these are spaces where we're not invited. And there can be some challenging interactions that happen. And I'm sure you have those, but I'm also sure that you can find at least one or two folks who, you know, like either got your back or you can learn something from to help get the information you need to get to the next level.
Exactly. And one thing that I did, because once I realized that it was like a social, like you were saying, like these social events. And like you said, Winifred, everybody knew everybody already. And I was a new person in the room. I just gathered all the information that I can gather while I was there, because I knew eventually I was going to need it. You know, as awkward or uncomfortable or intimidating that I felt being in those rooms, I said, let me walk. These tables are here for a reason. Let me walk. I need your card. I need your resources so I can use those resources to help my son, you know, learn better. And I gathered all the information that I could gather while I was in there. And then I took it home and I read over it and I researched and I Googled them. And I see what it was that they were doing. And it's just, you know, it was this routine. It was this pattern that just, again, I couldn't stop. I still don't stop. And my son is a senior. And I don't know what I'm going to do with myself, because I feel like I've been fighting for him for so long now that he's gone. I take that back, because now I just make sure that he knows how to advocate. But I still advocate for him, even as he's getting ready to go off to college. Asking the questions and making sure that he understands the questions that he needs to ask, which I never thought that this day would be, because when I look back at the second grader to the sixth grader who was just lost in a room, just lost. And I can remember conversations that we had. I can remember morning arguments and not wanting to get up and go to school. I can remember the fights because he didn't want me to leave him. As I dropped him off at school, I can remember all of that. And I can remember him saying, I will never go to college. And as Black parents tell you, you're either going to go to college, go into the military, or you're going to get a job. I told him the same thing. You choose. You're either going to, which one are you going to do? And I'm grateful to hear him say, I want to go to college, as scared as he is, as mm-hmm. a young Black man with dyslexia yeah. and executive functioning weaknesses. I'm amazed. I'm grateful that he is where he is today. And it's all because of the journey that we've been on navigating through special education, with me behind the scenes, making sure that his road was as smooth as it could be on a lot of bumpy journeys.
Has your son picked a major? Does he know where he's going? Is that how you guys figured all that out yet?
Yes. Yes, we have. And he had a lot of great options, and he's connected to me is what he said. So he decided to stay local. I don't know when you're going to air this, because he hasn't really shared with too many people where he's going.
You don't have to drop it. It's okay. I see you dancing around it. I hear it. So it's okay.
He had a college signing last night, and all he kept on saying was, don't post. Okay. Don't post it on social media. Don't post it on social media. Because he hasn't really told people where he's going, but he does know what he's going to major in. He's majoring in animation with a minor in gaming and musical engineering. So,
wow. Oh, yeah. Awesome. The arts and engineering pop right in up. Engineering. Top careers for dyslexic. So he falls right into that boat. This has been amazing.
Trace, can I ask? So you were like, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself, but then you rolled that back, and we know that you actually have a company that does advocacy work. Can you just say a little bit more about what your company is and how people can connect with you if they want more information?
Yeah, so it's Beautiful Minds LLC. You can either email me at Beautiful Minds LLC. It's Beautiful Minds CC LLC@gmail.com. You can also find more information out on my website at www.choicesimmons.com, which is it's a work in progress right now, but you can find out more information. And again, what I do is provide advocacy and consulting and support for families navigating special education. I go to IEP 504 meetings if that's what you need. Sometimes you just need somebody in the room with you. Right. Just to sit at that table so that they know that you have support. Because when you go in those rooms alone and it's so overwhelming, you're not really always able to take in what it is that they're giving out to you. So I go to 504 IEP meetings. I do consultations. I do interviews, school interviews, if you're looking for public or non-public schools as well. And I provide grief support. A lot of people don't realize grief is not just what happens when you lose people, when you have a physical loss, but grief is also, it's a loss of any kind. And so I work with students that have lost themselves. They lost their confidence. They lost their identities based on the struggles that they're going through special education, as well as parents that have also had some form of loss. And so I provide that grief support on an educational aspect as well as a personal aspect if you're dealing with loss of a loved one as well.
Wow. Okay. And I try to say this every episode, but you know, as we're talking, we're capturing the different points that are being made and the resources. And if y'all didn't get the website or the email, it'll be in either the show notes for the podcast. And if you're watching this on YouTube, it'll be in the description. All right, Choice. So before we wrap up, if there is one piece of advice that you want to give to another badass parent or aspiring badass parent, what would that piece of advice be?
Don't give up and educate yourself. Don't give up and educate yourself. The more you know, the more you'll get. And know that you're not alone. There is a world of people like you that's out there. So seek help, ask questions, and keep pushing.
That's right. Keep pushing. Oh my gosh. So there you have it, guys. Another badass parent episode with Choice Simmons, and it's a wrap.
All right.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.